Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Side Pitch. It is the podcast from the current creators of the world to the future creators of the world. I'm your host, Callan Swaim, and this week we have a very, very special episode, one that I will probably hold dear to my heart for the rest of my life. It's been a really weird time for American expats all over the world recently, at least I think. With all of the travel restrictions that have been put into place due to the way that the US has handled COVID, many articles have been published saying that the American passport is basically useless now because we aren't really allowed to travel to any country. So in the past few months, I've had to cancel 3 trips, all 3 of them being very important weddings of some of my closest friends. So it's been quite tough. So I decided to take a scheduled family Zoom call as my aunt, mom, and Nana were all visiting my Nana up in Wisconsin, the one who didn't know what a podcast was and still doesn't, and turn it into a Side Pitch episode where I could ask them about their careers and life advice. As you can tell, these Wisher girls are a hoot. Lots of jokes, lots of giggling, but also a lot of really great stories and amazing life advice. So get ready for a ride because you're about to see a sneak peek into how crazy our family gatherings are. Here they are.
Well, look who's here.
Can you hear us?
These are cute little glasses. Who are you?
These are my Nana stupid little here? Do you want Nana papers. To sit on the couch with us?
Yeah.
Okay, you come in the middle.
How are you, my baby girl?
I'm good. How are you?
No, you're in the middle, Mama.
You're in the middle. Come on.
No, I don't want to.
Oh, okay, then God. You sit in the middle, Wendy.
Mom, no, stop.
You have to
no,
play
Mom. Hi, Nana. You look beautiful.
Thank you.
Okay. Nana, how are you doing? You haven't talked yet.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Oh, she's on good behavior. She asked us again today what a podcast is. Nana's using her sexy voice.
So, Nana, Auntie Wendy, and Mom, hello. Welcome to Side Pitch Podcast. Yes. So I'm not exactly sure what this is going to look like. I'm just going to ask you a ton of questions because a lot of my friends really loved your cameo, Nana. They heard your voice and they said, we want to hear more Nana. Can you believe that?
Ask for royalties.
You got to be a little more vocal though, Nana.
Okay, so, I will.
So what I'm going to need you, all 3 of you to do, this is just so funny, is introduce yourselves. Nana, would you like to start?
I'm June Wisher, AKA Nana. I live in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Well, I was a secretary.
Is that
at
your
the school?
Which school?
Oconomowoc High School.
Auntie Wendy, your turn.
I'm Wendy Wisher. Wendy Wisher Newton. I'm Wendy Newton. I live in Kingston, Washington, which is across the water from Seattle. I'm a pilot for United Airlines. I help my husband by doing his books for his business, which is a construction company.
And now, Mother?
So I am Julie Wisher Swaim. And my first job, my most important job in life is being a mother. And then I also currently now just work for the Indiana State Department of Health. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. Well, actually Mooresville, Indiana, where Callan grew up. And my side pitch is I work with the Alexander Graham Bell Association following, I guess, what my passion has become in life, helping parents who want their children with hearing loss to be able to speak and listen and hear from the world around them.
So, Nana, tell me what life was like growing up, because you were one of 12.
No, one of 10.
10, okay.
The youngest.
When were you born, Nana?
August 2nd, 1929. I'm going to be 91.
Okay, and what was it like growing up in such a big family?
It was good. We had enough food, we had enough clothes, and we always had someone to play with. It was wonderful.
But Mama, did you have a shower in your house?
Eventually.
How old were you when you got a shower?
Can't remember that.
You just told me your brother put one in when you were a teenager.
Oh, okay.
But you had a bathtub, right?
No.
We had a round tub we used to bring up from the basement and put it in the kitchen to take a bath.
With the hose?
No, we used to use a pot and fill it up.
Did they change the water between everybody?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You never know. Good question.
Out a little house in the prairie.
Okay. So then, Nana, what was your first job growing up?
I worked in a grocery store, in a fruit store, fruit and vegetable store, when I was 15.
No, but tell about what you had to do when you walked home from school, from lunch, walk alone in the house.
That's not what she asked.
I'm telling you, yeah, but it's an interesting story.
I used to have to walk home at lunch, open the door, go down in the basement, and check the furnace in winter. Make sure that there was enough coal in the furnace to keep it warm till I got home at 4 o'clock. So then I would go down again at 4 o'clock and make sure that there was enough coal in the furnace to keep it warm till my father or the rest got home.
Would you have to shovel coal in if there wasn't enough?
Yeah.
How old were you?
8th grade.
Wow. Nana, if someone were to describe you as a young Juna Wisher, what would they say?
I don't know.
Nana, come on.
No.
Were you quiet? Were you a book person? Were you...
I was quiet. You were?
I read a lot.
Yeah, I was quiet.
Did you wear a lot of makeup?
Didn't wear makeup till I was in, what, 10th grade maybe? 10th, 11th grade.
But she shoveled coal when she was in 8th.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you did a fruit stand. So you
I went- worked, and then after, when I became 16, I worked for the telephone company. I was a telephone operator after school.
After school, so you'd go home and then you would put in the different...
Yes, number please.
Did you ever listen to anyone's conversations?
Sometimes.
That's a good question. I've never...
Okay. Did you hear any dirty convos?
No, no, no. I listened in on my boyfriend's phone.
Good, good. Thank you, Nana. Auntie Wendy, a lot of people ask when I tell them that my aunt is a pilot. They want to hear what it's like to be a pilot, especially a female pilot. We've talked about this before. It's a very male-dominated industry.
Probably like any job, it's a job you have to love because... it's a long road to where a lot of people always think you've made it as far as like being a captain. And it's a cyclical industry. For instance, right now with COVID, it's a downturn in the industry right now. What's it like being a pilot? You have to be a structured person and very OCD. So as much as my sister always says that I'm anal, it's a good thing because that's what you want your captain to be, is anal. There's nothing like it when you're flying along and you're watching the moon rise and you're over Iceland or Greenland or flying into London, doing any of those, flying out to the cities that you get to fly. It's not an easy career choice. You're away from family a lot, but I couldn't imagine doing anything else. And all I've ever done is waitress, so I'm really screwed.
What was your first job, Mom?
I was working at Stein's, which was like a Walgreens. It was my first job, other than babysitting, of course. And Stein's, they liked me. I was a checkout cashier. And then they had me work in the pharmacy. So I was 16 and I was working in the pharmacy. And the first day I was working back there, and the pharmacist was in back doing all the pills, mm-hmm. and a man came up. I had to sell him condoms. And it was the most embarrassing thing in the world, because back then condoms, you had to get them from the pharmacist.
So then you became, I know we're skipping quite a bit, so tell us about your TV stint, your reporter stint. Glamorous.
Oh, it was very glamorous. Yep. So I went to Purdue in radio and television and Spanish. And my dream had been to be a foreign correspondent in Central America. In that field, you take whatever you can get. And I was lucky. I was one of the few people who got a job in television out of college. And I was paid so low that I could have gotten food stamps. But of course, the station didn't want me to get food stamps. That wouldn't look too good. And I was a cocktail waitress at a restaurant, and they made me quit because it didn't look good to have on-air personalities and second jobs. But they did give me a stipend for clothes and hair. So I guess that was supposed to make up for it. I did that for a year. I realized I'd rather be making the news than reporting it. After 1 year, I left and started working for the state of Indiana in international trade. And I traveled around South America and Europe for almost 4 years, promoting Indiana for the Pan Am Games, but also Indiana product. And that was really a great job. It was lots of fun.
I didn't know that either. Look at these powerful ladies. Love it. Okay, Nina, what was it like to move your entire family to a different country?
Dad was transferred, so we went. Oh, it was hard. Of course it was hard. It was okay. I got a job, and then it was okay.
Okay, well then moving to a happier topic, what was one of the happiest moments of your life?
I think when I met Don and got married.
You need to tell him how you met Daddy.
Yes.
How?
Tell the story.
She lived with him.
Back in 1944.
They were married in 48.
Oh, sorry. Okay, tell the story, Mama.
What story?
Where were you living?
I was living at their house. My brother was remodeling our house, so we had to move out. So we rented a room where my sister and I rented a house at Don's place.
Well, before that, what did you do?
Played cards. And let's see, we played cards. And he said, okay. I owed him so much money, we were playing gin, and he was really good at gin. I think he cheated. No, he didn't. And I owed him so much money, he said, will you go out on a date with me? And I said, yes.
And you wouldn't have to pay him back.
And I wouldn't have to pay him any money.
I think that was inferred.
And yeah. you guys played cards and sheep's head all the time. Did you play gin again? Was that like an anniversary tradition?
No, not gin. Just we played a lot of sheep's head. And bridge. He was good at bridge. Very good.
Okay, Auntie Wendy, now we're going to talk about your side pitch.
Okay.
How did you get roped into doing the books for Uncle Ted's business?
In my job, I'm home so many days a week and being anal. He had been working for somebody, wanted to go out on his own. So we set up the business and I am just a book person. I keep our books. So I decided to help him because in order to pay an accountant to do it, it costs a lot of money to do that. We just decided that I would do it for him. It went on from there. He started out as a sole proprietor and then went up to being incorporated, and I just helped with all of that part. It was sort of self-taught and made it easier because of computers.
You were doing the books from day one.
Day one. And it fits with my personality. I like keeping numbers. I keep my own books to the penny. So
well, I'm assuming Uncle Ted's business has grown since day one. Is that something from a strategy perspective that you guys need to talk about before it happens? Or is he kind of CEO?
He's in charge of that kind of thing because he's the one who does all the work and figures out what he needs. But we do discuss it because it does add work for me also.
Yeah.
Ask her how she met Ted.
That's not my side pitch.
You know what? Because Nana wants you to say, how did you meet Uncle Ted?
In Mexico. Your mom's going to say it was her fault.
We're
going to blame your mom. No. I was flying for the commuters and I had 8 days off and nobody would go to Mexico. And my sister said, go by yourself. So I did. And that's where I met Uncle Ted.
At a bar, right?
No. Oh. On a boat.
When she went to Mexico, she had to just let the hotel people know if she was going out. And so
truly,
she went,
I already did that.
So when, well, just to say again, yes, little sister. And so she went with this family kind of horseback riding, yeah. And then came back on the boat, and Ted was kind of drinking with his friends and mm-hmm. saw Wendy and started scooting over to her.
And she looked horrible because she just got back from horseback riding.
I didn't know that you looked horrible.
Well, I had a bathing suit on. I had a hat on. I had no makeup on. I was sweaty. When Uncle Ted, he actually came in a taxi to get me for the date at the Fiesta. He walked right by me.
He didn't know her.
He walked right by me and I said, Ted. And he looks, he goes, Wendy. And I said, wow, I really must have looked like shit out there.
Oh my gosh.
What did he say to that?
He did. He just kept going. What could he say? There was nothing he could say.
So watching your husband start a business, what do you think were some of the most challenging things that he faced?
For Ted, starting a business, it's a good thing. It's a bad thing. He cares too much. And so for him, we tried doing a spec house and you have to know your market and put it in. We ended up making like $5,000 after a year. And that was what our profit was out of it, because he always wanted to put the best in houses, but it wasn't the market for where it was. So with Ted, the hardest part is, and the thing that I probably helped with the most, is he assumes that everybody can see what he does. And I'm like, honey, I don't understand. So we would be building something and he would be talking and I'd look at him and I go, I don't understand what you're talking about. He goes, you can't envision that. I go, no, honey, I can't envision that. I said, they give me an altimeter because they don't want me to envision my altitude. They want me to know it. So he, Uncle Ted, would start building mock-ups of things. And he's always done that since that point. And it helps clients because clients don't always can't envision. That's why the HGTV series works so well, because people can't see what, some people can't see what's not in front of them. So he right. can look at it and see something different than I see. So.
But interestingly, what he has said is that Chip and Joanna and shows like that drive him crazy because now people want him to be Chip and Joanna Gaines yeah. deciding how a house would look best.
But that's not what he does. He's a builder. He wants them to give him the plans and he can make it happen.
Oh, that's interesting.
So
not a house flipper. Okay. Wow. How do you guys so there's like a lot of How I Built This podcast episodes. Have you heard about this with Guy Raz from NPR?
No.
No.
Okay.
So basically he goes and he talks to a lot of different CEOs of companies of large brands. And there was one about, I think it was Canva, which is like this app. And it was a husband and a wife who had gone into partnership into creating this business. And they said that every time that there is a lot of conflict, the way that they resolve it is they stop what they're doing, they turn off the lights, they lay down and hold hands and just don't talk until it's funny, and then they figure it out. How do you and Uncle Ted resolve conflict dealing with the business?
He doesn't want to charge what he's worth. So there is our biggest conflict. He will underpay himself because he'll be like, oh, well, I was there for that long, but that's too many hours. And I'm like, they contracted you. You need to charge that out. There would be our biggest conflict. He's gotten better about doing that, but he wants people to be happy. So I'm the bulldog. I'm the nasty one. And he's the one who wants to just have everybody be happy. Usually we discuss it. It's not always easy because he knows the building side. I know the book side. So we're looking at it from different perspectives.
Okay, Mom, are you ready for your spotlight?
Okay. So my primary job is working at the State Department of Health for the Early Hearing Detection and Intervention Program. Every state in the United States has an EDI program. That's what the acronym, how we say it. And what we do is when babies are born anywhere in the United States, but specifically in Indiana, a baby is given a hearing screen within the first 48 hours of their birth to make sure that the baby can hear out of both ears. And they have to pass both ears at the same time. And by a screening, what that means is there's little electrodes put on their head and little earbuds in their ears, and three different pitches are put in their ears, and then the brain records those sounds to make sure the baby's hearing. If the baby does not hear all three of those at a certain decibel, then the baby refers or doesn't pass. And what that means is when they're out of the hospital within the next month to 2 months, they should be getting a diagnostic hearing evaluation. So that means that they hear all volume or all sounds in the speech spectrum at the lowest possible, like 20 decibels, which is considered normal hearing. And if a baby doesn't, they're often identified as having hearing loss. There are different kinds of hearing losses. There's auditory neuropathy, or there could be hearing loss due to fluid being in the ears, which is a conductive hearing loss, which tubes can take care of. But this is for what's called sensory neural hearing loss, where maybe there's something wrong with the hair cells in the cochlea, which is how we hear, or maybe with the auditory nerve, which takes the sounds from the hair cells into the brain for the brain to process. So the whole reason that this hearing screen bill was passed, it was passed about 15 or 20 years ago now.
I was going to say, I don't remember my kids getting the hearing.
Yeah, okay. Mine didn't either.
Okay.
But what was happening was most kids who are over 20, they would be kids that often, if they had a mild hearing loss, were not found until they were in first grade, because they weren't learning to read correctly. They weren't hearing the S's, the T's, the high frequency sounds. And so then they'd be put in special ed classrooms, and then all of a sudden they get that free test, and then they'd find out that the child has hearing loss. Well, the biggest problem with that is that the brain of children from 0 to 3 is when your brain is actually forming the architecture for how you're going to learn the rest of your life. So if your brain has been deprived of sounds during the first 3 years, in order to try and reteach those sounds to your brain that doesn't even have the capacity anymore, because the auditory part of your brain has been taken over by the visual part by then, it's very hard to be able to catch up for those kids. So that was the impetus for getting this bill passed, and why now we in Indiana have detect over 300 babies a year with hearing loss before they're a year old. Some children have progressive hearing loss that gets worse and worse and worse, and they have to be followed. So what I do is call those families to encourage them to get hearing screens. And a lot of it too is just helping moms, new moms, realize that if their baby's pediatrician says, oh, don't worry about it, you know, it's just fluid in their ears or this or that, that they get to say to their doctor, no, I really want to get this done. And that's a really hard lesson for moms, you know, and plus you don't want to think anything's wrong with your baby. So,
right. For new moms, totally. You want to trust the experts, but.
You want to believe everything's okay.
Right. Well, and you also do this with Spanish-speaking families too, right?
Yes, I do it with Spanish-speaking families, just making them understand, because especially from different nationalities, they don't even know what the U.S. system is like, much probably like you going in the British system now.
Yeah.
You know what it's like in the U.S., but have no idea going to a doctor's office what is normal.
So you just recently took on another side pitch with A.G. Bell.
Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, and his wife was deaf, which is kind of ironic considering the telephone was always the bane, bane for deaf people, because they could never talk on it because they were deaf. But so Alexander Graham Bell helped me. I have a son, you have a brother named Grayson, who lost his hearing at 10 months old from meningitis. And this is before there was a vaccination for it. By the time you were born, Callan, the vaccination was available for babies. But when Gray was there, it was not available yet. And he went deaf from his first ear infection and his first fever at 10 months old. And so he got hearing aids, and we could never get an audiogram on him. And what that means is we'd be putting him in a sound booth, and he had to let us know the softest sounds he could hear. And they kept fluctuating. And Alexander Graham Bell, the association parents joined. Back then, parents had to pay $35 to be a member. And we would get these pamphlets or these newsletters that would come. And there was a doctor named Dr. Epstein who wrote an article. And I remember reading this article in October. Grayson was 4 years old. He wore hearing aids. I could understand it, but no one else could. We were still teaching him how to speak and listen. He didn't do sign language because I wanted him to be able to speak to everybody. If he did sign language, he would have been going to the deaf school on a bus an hour away, maybe even having to live there. And there was no way I wanted my baby to be moving away. And so, Dr. Epstein had written an article saying that babies who had meningitis could have their cochleas ossify, which means that where all the hair cells are turned to stone or ossification. No one had ever told me this at our children's hospital. And the speech therapist, where he was going three times a week, had never said this to me. So I happened to call the number at A.G. Bell, got through to Dr. Epstein, and he, and I couldn't believe it. And I asked him about it, and he goes, why the hell haven't you gotten an MRI at Indiana Children's Hospital? I was like, I don't know. And he said, you call up Rich Miyamoto, who is the doctor who ended up giving Grayson a cochlear implant, right now and get him in there. And sure enough, Grayson's, both of his ears had ossified, but one less than the other. And so he was able to get a cochlear implant. And because of A.G. Bell and that, Grayson is a successful hearing adult now, with lots of speech therapy, but he made it and went through regular schools. And so because of my job with that, I ended up getting the job at the Indiana State Department of Health, because all the parents who work there are parents of children with hearing loss. And then they,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, in our division, yeah. So that's why we're all considered passionate parents, people that nobody wants to mess with.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, because we're moms. And then A.G. Bell asked me if I'd be willing to work with families around the world. So I do Zoom calls with families. We do coffee chats where we just put, just to give parents someone to talk to, and not about my story, though they all want to know what my son is doing. And I always mention I have a daughter too.
Thank you.
Just so you know, because they just want to know, because when he went deaf, truly, my first thought was, when we were told he was deaf at the hospital, I was wondering, would he be able to drive a car? And Dad wondered, will he ever have a date? And 30 years later, those are questions parents still wonder when they find out their children are deaf.
Yeah.
Because I had never seen a child with hearing aids.
Yeah.
I never, never, ever, I didn't even know kids could wear them. I mean, really, I studied in college and knew nothing about it. The only reference I had was Annie Sullivan from Helen Keller.
Auntie Wendy, so when Mom called you and told you that Grayson had meningitis and was in the hospital, was when you were going for your final interview to be a pilot, right?
Mm-hmm. I was at my interview with United, and I went to call Nana for some words of wisdom.
And there were no cell phones.
There were no cell phones. No, I was using a calling card from the hotel, and her boss said, Wendy, I think you need to call your dad. Your mom's not here. So I called Grandpa, and he told me that Mom was down, and Grandpa, in his way, said, Grayson is very sick. So I happened to get hold of Nana at your house, Julie's auntie, at my sister's house, Julie's house. And Grayson was in
intensive care.
And they didn't know at that point whether or not he was going to live. And this I all found out. He was 10 months. Grayson, your brother, was huge. He was 10 months and he was a big boy. But they didn't know whether he was going to live or not. And I got this information right before I went in for my interview. So I get in there for my interview, and it is my interview in front of captains and one HR person, and introduce myself. And then I asked them, I said, I have a favor to ask you. I was wondering if there might be a way I could get out a little bit earlier. And I explained to them that Grayson was in intensive care and they didn't know if he was going to live. And they said, would you like to reschedule the interview? And I looked at them and I said, I can't get there any earlier. Let's go ahead with the interview. And part of a pilot's job is compartmentalizing, is what we call it. So when I'm flying the airplane, I have to be flying the airplane. I can't be worried about somebody at home, or I have my whole entire being has to be wrapped around flying an airplane, because I have 180 lives in my hands. So my ability to turn that off for the time needed, I think that helped me get the job. Now, I always jokingly tell Grayson that he cost me 2 weeks seniority because of it, because they called me and had to bring me in because I didn't tell.
Wait, Wendy calls me 2 weeks later. She came, Grayson lived. He was in intensive care for 4 days, then in the hospital another 3 weeks. But Wendy called me and said, I just got a letter from medical. And they said, I need to come back because they have a concern on my medical. And she goes, do you think I have cancer? And I was like, if you have cancer and they didn't tell you that, they would be considered reckless. So no, yeah. I'm sure that. So,
but they didn't tell me, it didn't occur to me who the doctor was. It turns out, because I also had had a visit with a psychiatrist. I didn't tell the psychiatrist about Grayson because at that point I didn't know whether I could hold it together and I didn't want to start crying. And so I go in and he goes, so I think you were holding back on something last time. And I looked at him and I told him about Grayson and that he was going to live and I
and death.
Burst and he was dead. Well, they didn't know that yet. 2 weeks later, oh, you didn't know okay. that yet. I burst out in tears and I thought, well, there goes my job. And anyway, long story short, he talked about it, gave me a Kleenex. We walk outside and I'm walking down the hall and he goes, Wendy. And I turn around and there was a note on the sticky note on the door and he hands it to me and it says, if wisher yes, send to employment office. And he goes, yes. And I looked at him, he goes, if you hadn't started crying, you never would have had the job.
So thought that you were a psychopath.
Yeah. So I teased Grayson that he cost me 2 weeks seniority, but he was also probably what got me the job because they saw that I could compartmentalize, as we call it.
What a good story. That's my favorite story. I know it's on bad circumstances, but okay, Mom.
What I love doing with AG Bell is some parents call me and have no idea anything about deafness, like where I was to begin with. Yeah. And although AG Bell works with families, to help support families who want their children to learn to speak and listen and work in the regular world, there are parents that don't even know that there is a regular world and another world and interpreters and all the other things, the type of technology. So I talk to parents about whether they want, you know, their child to speak, or do they want to also do sign language, or do they want them to be part of the deaf community? And I refer them to those associations because it's not that we're trying to talk people into having their children speak and listen. It's what each family wants and what works for them. And as you know...
Wait, but you do need to explain that it might sound weird to people, for parents that don't want their kids to speak and listen.
Oh,
but there is a lot of controversy around that. And
basically, the deaf community is a whole, fully functioning community with their own language. And people grow up very successful, deaf people who sign and who want to keep that tradition going on. There are a lot of deaf adults who have children that are both deaf and hearing in the same family. And the hearing children can grow up signing fluently and speaking fluently, whereas their brothers and sisters who don't have hearing aids only sign, or their parents. And so those often are called capital D deaf, because their whole being is surrounded within the deafness and deafness culture, and it's a full and wonderful culture. The controversy around it is many deaf people don't believe in cochlear implants. And so when Grayson got his cochlear implants, I had people telling me I was like Hitler trying to exterminate a population. They told Grayson he had brain damage and that we were embarrassed of him, and that's why we wanted him to have a cochlear implant.
Which he most definitely did not have brain damage. He's extremely intelligent.
Oh, no, but some deaf people believe a cochlear implant causes brain damage.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
And wow. So I mean, it's even now, well, tell the experience what happened when you met Bryn.
Wait, who's interviewing who here?
I was a television reporter before you. I'm your mother. I'm pulling rank.
Yeah, Grayson and Bryn and I, Bryn is his wife currently, we met at a bowling alley. We were having a great time and a big group of people from the deaf school, it was like a summer camp, came in. And it was deaf signing parents and then deaf signing children and counselors, I guess.
And they had an MDO shirt. That's how you knew they were from the deaf school.
Correct.
They were all mini deaf Olympics. Cool.
correct. One of the counselors came up and saw that my brother, we were not talking to anybody. We were sitting having a great time at our, you know, having a few beers. And one of the counselors came up and started signing to Grayson, pointing at his ear, telling him that he was a snob for having a cochlear implant. You didn't know this, Auntie Wendy. They came up to the table and he started signing. Obviously, I didn't know what was happening, but you can tell by their face. Bryn had no idea what was going on. Absolutely horrifying. Grayson ended up signing back. I don't want any trouble. Please leave me alone. It was funny because Bryn looked at me and she's like, what's going on? I'm like, there's about to be a fight. It's going down. And it was fine, but it just shows that there is a lot of kind of contention.
I asked Grayson about it, and he goes, Mom, this happens to me all the time. No big deal. I was furious because I work on the deaf school. Khaled and I went through Facebook and found the counselor who was the person who did it. And I took that back to the deaf school and went to a man I worked with who is deaf, culturally deaf, signing. We had an interpreter there. Talked about it. And he said, you know, we can't stop everyone. And I said, but the problem is they had the MDO mini deaf Olympic t-shirts on. Little kids were watching this guy go up to my son and do this. Obviously being able to see everything this man is signing because they all signed. And I said, that's not right. Just like it wouldn't be right for someone with a cochlear implant to go up to a signing deaf person saying, why the hell aren't you speaking?
So I just have one final question for all three of you. So Nana, can you give me three pieces of life advice that you think everyone should know? No, nothing about sex.
No, it wasn't.
No.
Okay, Mom or Auntie Wendy, we can come back to Nana. Nana, you need to think.
My biggest thing is I choose to wake up happy and glad about life in the morning. Being happy is a choice, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Make it your choice. Choose to be happy because it is a choice a lot of times.
Oh yeah, all the time.
Julie?
I think mine has to do more with what I've learned. And your dad is the one who helped me realize this. I want people to like me. When you have a child with a special need or you're going through life not part of a group, you need to realize that people aren't all going to like you and that's okay. And if you're strong in what you believe in, that you've just got to be okay with people not liking you. It's okay not to like me, but damn it, you're going to have to listen to me. Dad would say to me when I'd come home after teachers would say suddenly aggressive things like, oh, you're not as bad as I heard you were, or something like that, when I'd be helping out in classrooms because they knew that I was always advocating for Grayson in school. Mm-hmm. And he and Gary would say to me like, would you rather have them think, oh, here's Julie Swaim coming in here. We don't have to worry about her. We can do anything we want. No, you'd rather have them think she's coming in. We need to be prepared. Like and respect aren't the same things.
Okay, Nana.
You know what Julie told me to say? Always have clean underwear because you might be in an accident.
That's what she used to tell us. Always wear clean underwear.
That is your motto. I actually have heard that many times. So one more time so I can get it. Say it again, Nana.
Always wear clean underwear. You might be in an accident.
Oh, I'm glad I got that. Thank you, Nana.
We need a drink.
I've already had one.
I know I said it in the past and I'll say it again. This was such a fun episode to record. My family might be a little bit odd in the fact that we love to sit around and tell old family stories. But not very often do I get to sit down and ask my aunt, my mom, and my nanas about their careers and how they got there. And it was really powerful for me to hear the life advice that my mom and aunt gave. Because looking back, I can 100% see their life mottos and their everyday actions. So just remember, choose to be happy. It's better to be respected than liked. And always make sure you have a fresh pair of underwear in case you have an accident. So that wraps up this episode of Side Pitch. You can find Side Pitch any place you can listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, CastBox. Please follow me on Instagram at Side Pitch Podcast, and then you can check out our website at www.sidepitchpodcast.com. See you next week. We're coming for you.